Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Rabono podcast. Once again, I'm Moose Okonga, joined by Ryan Hanamoku de Silva. Actually, Ryan and I have been in Manchester, meeting with Ander Herrera, interviewing him for ESPN FC, of which more later. The theme of this podcast is going to be underrated tough guys, in which we discuss men like Ander Herrera, who don't seem that hard at first sight, but pack a deceptively strong punch on the field, of course. But before that, we're going to round up this week's action from around Europe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, before we do, can I do the admin?
Yeah, you can do the admin.
Go ahead.
Little reminder, if anyone's listening on iTunes, please give us a review and a rating, preferably 5 stars, and tell a friend. What's the other?
Tell an enemy.
Yes.
It helps us
grow the podcast, and obviously we're still finding our way with this lark.
We are indeed.
Yeah.
But yes, the roundup, Michael.
Well, we can get onto the Premier League in a minute. Big, big win for Dortmund. They didn't take full advantage of Bayern's slip-up because they lost 3-1 to Leverkusen, at Leverkusen. First defeat for them since the Clásica in early November. But they did get a draw at Frankfurt, which is, there's no shame in that. Frankfurt, very, very good team.
Dortmund, right? Yeah.
Yep. So Eintracht have got a fantastic forward line, you know, Rebic, Jovic and Haller. And I think they're the most potent forward line in the Bundesliga, one of them anyway. But yeah, so Dortmund are now 7 points clear at the top of the Bundesliga and just stretched their lead a little bit.
They could have absolutely walked that as well, that game.
They missed a few big chances.
I mean, Royce could have had a hat-trick before Eintracht even scored.
But one thing that I did notice was, and this is only the second time this has happened this season, that Frankfurt shut Sancho down. And the other time I'd noticed that was in the game that I went to in Madrid, Atletico, where Felipe Luis didn't give him a kick, really. There is a sense, I think, that teams are starting to realise that Sancho is the danger man.
How do they do it? Is this Sancho corner? I suppose Sancho corner comes.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought we weren't going to do it this week.
Yeah.
You're making it sound like this stuff is scripted. No, it's not. It's just off the cuff. It's,
yeah. Well, I have to admit, I didn't see all of the game. I only saw the highlights, but it seemed to me that they stuck a man on him and basically sacrificed one of their own players to keep him quiet. Man marked him. So, yeah, quiet game for Sancho, but Dortmund still created chances. And as you say, they could have won it. But yeah, they were 6 points clear going into the weekend. They're now 7 points clear. And yeah, I think the smart money is on Dortmund.
They've got their ex-manager to thank for that point being a good point,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, Peter Bosch is now the Leverkusen coach, of course, the former Dortmund coach. He didn't last at Dortmund too long, and I think he was a bit unlucky, actually, to lose his job with more the circumstances that the club found themselves in at that point. But yeah, I'm sure he would have been happy to do his old employer's
favour. What's funny, watching Leverkusen Bayern, if you get a chance to catch the highlights, absolutely ferocious pressing.
Yeah,
there was an early penalty that Leverkusen was denied, I think, and it came from basically Bayern being completely unable to play out from the back. In a kind, weirdly enough, this kind of dogmatic mentality of we have to play it out, we can't hoof it clear. We got pressed so effectively, they ended up playing it back to the centre back, and then Hummels handled it.
Yes, yes.
And it was funny because you're thinking, are Bayern actually playing with? They're obviously playing to a Kovac philosophy.
Yeah.
But teams that watch them know they play to that and know they will be predictable,
yeah,
and then hound them.
True. And, you know, for Bayern's strengths, and, you know, they have had a below par season by their standards, but they are still a very formidable outfit.
Right.
Defensively, though, they're not very mobile. Mats Hummels and Niklas Süle, good players, but I think Hummels, we've seen the best of him, and Süle doesn't, he's not the quickest. So if you compress effectively, you can beat them. And I'm sure Liverpool will have scouts at these games, and we'll be looking at that. And Liverpool are a team who press.
They're ferocious.
Yeah, without, you know, they don't stop. So I do worry, like, just thinking ahead to those Champions League games against Liverpool, I do worry a bit for Bayern. I think they'll score goals over the two legs, but I don't think they'll score as many.
Can I throw a theory out here? So you have these centre-backs who are ageing and past their defensive best. They keep them in because they're so good at distributing and building attacks. And in these elite teams, they almost feel like this defender isn't the fastest anymore, isn't the best tackler anymore, but they're so incredible at passing. So Hummels actually launched the attack, I think, for Bayern's opening goal, or one of the best chances. So that works against 95% of teams in the league. But you come to the Champions League, and all of a sudden, it's a feeding frenzy.
Absolutely. And Leverkusen, I think, have provided the blueprint here of how to beat them, or how to beat them. Because Bayern, let's not forget, they were in great form going into this game. And Leverkusen played with, I think, Peter Bosch fielded four recognised, like, forwards, actual forwards in that game.
You've seen it in their goals, though. I mean, they've scored three goals in three of their last four league games. And the only one they didn't was when they lost to Gladbach.
Yeah.
And they've, you know, before that, they scored. That was a couple of games they scored two, they scored four. You know, they're banging in the
and
goals.
The way to beat Bayern, I think, is just to be ruthlessly attacking, fearless. And you know Liverpool are going to do that.
I know this is not the theme of the podcast, but a theme could almost be blueprints, because just as Leverkusen have given Liverpool a bit of a blueprint, Lyon have given United one against PSG.
Yeah.
Because the way they've hounded Thiago Silva this weekend is a real sign.
What was the final score in that?
2-1 Lyon.
Yeah.
Nabil Fekir scored the winning penalty for Lyon against a PSG. And again, these big teams have shown if you attack the heart of them, if you almost go straight down the throat, then that's the way to sort of get at them, I think. But elsewhere in Germany, what else is happening?
Borussia Mönchengladbach are going under the radar.
Great side.
Another win for them. And they're, one of those teams who perhaps don't get the credit they deserve. I think Leipzig won again as well. So, yeah.
Actually, on the Leipzig tip, Emile Smith Rowe.
Yes.
From Arsenal. They're on loan till the end of the season.
Leipzig wanted him permanently, actually.
Yeah, Arsenal were very key to point out that it didn't include an option to buy.
Yeah, that's what Leipzig were pushing for. So, in the end, they settled for the loan. But it's another exciting signing by them.
Yeah.
Ryan, what are your impressions of Smith Rowe? Because I'm sure a lot of listeners haven't seen so much of him. I haven't either.
I think he's got potential to be a really, really, really good player.
Okay. What's his best position?
He is an attacking midfielder.
Yeah.
He's played wide. He's played number 10 coming up through the youth team. I actually wrote in, though, do you remember the piece I wrote about Ramsey? I thought that maybe one of the reasons that Arsenal were inclined to let Ramsey go was to kind of get wages off the books and shift their focus onto someone like Smith Rowe in that position.
Big shoes to fill, though.
Yeah, but I think he's got real potential. He's very, very highly regarded. I'm excited about him as a player.
Yeah, so good to see so many young English players now seeing the Bundesliga as for what it is, a great breeding ground for talent.
Yeah, I mean, we said it last week and we said it time before. It's just, I think it's a good league to go to.
Segue?
Yeah.
Since we're discussing young English talent, segue to Marcus Rashford, only because I don't want to talk too much about United. I just think it's really great how he
says this. It's just, I don't want to bring this up.
No, it's not really that. I'm just really happy for Rashford, because there was a time I was even considering a year ago a loan might be the best move for him.
I thought you were going to say for you then. I was like, why? What happened?
I'm very, very happy to see him finishing like he is, moving like he is off the ball. It's great to see.
Yeah, that was a good win for United, that, I thought.
Listen, Leicester have been playing well against big teams.
Yeah.
It's like Crystal Palace right now. There are certain teams whose strengths match up very well against the weaknesses of major teams. So Leicester, the classic thing with them is Vardy has a very good first touch on the run, which is great against any team playing a high line. And most of the big teams are possession-based, right?
Yeah.
And so in that context, to win, especially at Leicester, it's a fantastic result.
Speaking of first touches, that touch by Rashford for the goal and the pass from Pogba, there seems to be a real understanding between those two.
It's like Song and Van Persie, isn't it? You know that like diagonal pass that Song used to float into the channel and Van Persie would just lash onto it. It was just this thing. It was almost like a sort of a quarterback and a wide receiver.
Mm.
And
the Perlo to Lichtsteiner.
I prefer Song Van Persie.
The reason I brought that up was because I was talking about it yesterday.
Oh, really?
It was like the, I don't know if you remember that advert that was Pirlo and Lichtsteiner, them at training, and this is a bit of a tangent, so I apologise. But, you know, they're sat there having dinner, and basically Lichtsteiner's like, hey, Andrea, can you pass me the salt? And he's like, yeah, sure. And he passed him the salt.
he's
like, grazie, he's like, prego. And he says, oh, and the pepper, actually. He's like, yeah, sure. And it's all like this other stuff. And then they go into the car park, and Lichtsteiner says, hey, have you got my keys? And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah. He chucks in the keys. And then Pirlo stops and does this proper thinking face. And then it cuts into all of these times where he's clipped this same diagonal ball over to Lichtsteiner.
Nice.
It's a good advert. I can't remember what it is.
For? Was it not Adidas?
I can't remember. It was a partner of Juve anyway.
Right,
but
That's a combo I hadn't seen. There's something to be said about, oh my God, more content for the website. Combinations.
Yeah.
So great combinations like Alba to Messi and vice versa, Dani Alves to mm-hmm. Messi. But certainly Pogba-Rashford is a key combination. Moving quickly on from United, City with an important, a vital win over Arsenal, which went, I suppose, largely as you'd expect, given where both teams are in their development arcs. Very promising from Guendouzi. Difficult start for Denis Suarez, but it's a tough game to come into. Aguero, ruthless as ever. I mean, what's wild about Aguero is just how low he gets for that diving header, the opening goal.
Never mind that. How low did Lauren Koscielny get for his diving header?
I mean, it was almost a tribute act. Also an Aguero tribute act.
Because I was at the game, and from where I was sat, I couldn't believe it was actually Koscielny, because I assumed it must have been someone small. I thought it was Torreira.
He got under it. He went to the roof of the net, didn't he? He got under it. Wild.
But it all came about from a bad error from Iwobi.
The first goal.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be playing around with that there.
But isn't that what City do to you as well? Isn't there also an element of like they swarm you like that?
Nah, yeah, do you know what though?
That's been too kind. Iwobi should have got rid of it.
It was a really weird game, I thought, because I expected City to completely demolish Arsenal and they scored straight away. And I was sat there kind of thinking, right, this is going to be 5-6. And they kind of had a few chances, but being there, it never felt like Arsenal were on edge at all, really, until, you know, they got back into it. And yeah, City had way more of the ball. And they got in a couple of times, but I wouldn't say it felt like Arsenal were comfortable, because they weren't. It, you know, nothing about playing City at City is comfortable. But half time, I mean, it was just a terrible time to concede that second goal. I think if Arsenal had got to half time 1-1,
yeah,
that was really key.
It could easily have been a different game. And also, the third goal as well was a handball by Aguero. So I don't know. I think I actually went into that game thinking Arsenal could get something from it. And if a couple of things had gone, you know, if Iwobi hadn't given away the ball where he did, if Arsenal hadn't conceded that second one at such a crucial time, and the third one shouldn't have been a goal, I don't know. I don't think it was the two teams were as far apart as we thought. And I don't think City are at the top of their game at the moment.
No, they are almost like a championship fatigue. You know, like this kind of, when you're that brilliant, you see it with Golden State Warriors in basketball, when you've won one title so resoundingly and you've been so dominant, it's difficult to maintain the intensity sometimes. Mm. And then all it takes is for you to dip your performance slide and other teams raise theirs by 10%.
Yeah.
And one thing I want to say as well before I forget is, what is so great about the Premier League this season is that the big games have felt big. Mm-hmm. Like United Arsenal recently, City Liverpool, City Arsenal. These games do feel grand. Liverpool Chelsea, even in the cup, you know, when Chelsea knocked out Liverpool. Mm. These, you know what I mean? These people are bringing, you're seeing managers make decisions in real time. Even, you know, even that, I know that Arsenal got turned over at Anfield, but even in that game, you saw like really smart tactical planning. It wasn't all, I mean, the scoreline is brutal. Mm. For Arsenal, but in the early exchanges of that game, you could see Arsenal really causing some particular
And you saw
problems.
Actually, I think that one of the things being at the stadium, it was quite confusing to understand why, because when the lineups came out, it looked like Arsenal playing a back three and Kolasinac was playing as a wing back.
Mm.
And he was actually playing left midfield. And I watched the game back when I got back this morning, and it didn't really clock at the time, but Kyle Walker was extremely quiet. And actually, I think that Brilliant. Might have been a very low key tactical, you know, not a masterstroke, because obviously Arsenal lost the game, but actually pinning someone like Kolasinac higher to keep Kyle Walker back. And I think the thing that's quite encouraging from an Arsenal point of view is that, yeah, Arsenal lost the game, but I tweeted at half time, and I know it's a bit kind of like, well, yeah, that's the point. But I said, the only difference really in this game is that Arsenal just don't have the players to play this way. And I kind of feel for Emery a little bit because losing someone like Hector Bellerin, you see how important that is for a game like Man City, because he's not just integral to how Arsenal defend, but he's massively crucial to how Arsenal attack.
The outlet.
A similar thing happened with Poch in his first season at Spurs. Same thing happened with Klopp in his first season.
And
similar
thing
with Guardiola to an extent. Even if Arsenal don't finish in the top four, which is going to be a real shame, I still think that there's been signs from Emery, even in some of the games that Arsenal have lost. Whilst maybe there's a lack of a clear style of football, I think that you saw signs of encouragement.
I don't watch Arsenal every week, so I'm obviously not as close to it. I'm really encouraged by it. I look at it and go, of course, people are overreacting. There was a clip on social media about how, yeah, it's the end of the banter era. Arsenal United is the banter era now. And, you know, it's Arsenal fan TV, just typical type of chat. But I remember thinking, Emery's just a good dude and he's a good manager and he's making smart choices and really informed choices, and it's a personnel thing. You know, United has a squad depth thing for us. Yeah. So we have a fullback problem. Yeah. We have a major fullback problem at United. And Arsenal, again, maybe three players short of maybe the truly elite level, but it's there. The structure is there.
I think fullbacks are key now. You've seen how massively they upgraded Man City.
Isn't there an essay on the Rabona website called The Age of the Fullback?
I'm not sure who it's by, though.
Not sure. I think there's I've heard. I was told, I was in a cafe the other day and overheard two people talking about it.
Is it Musa and Okwonga?
You know what? I'm being victimised. You know what? Those who know, once a podcast, I'm targeted. Let me rise above it. When they go low, we go high.
Hang on, actually, I do want to target you about something.
Go for it.
Last week.
Yes.
So I think since the last podcast, you said Spurs don't win games when they're not playing well. They've since won two.
And I said that Wolves are not scoring enough goals,
Been absolutely banging
them in, exactly.
Nostradamus
is...
The coaches of the respective teams clearly listen to this podcast.
Screw you, Rabona.
Who's Okwonga? Luckier than a cat on the pitch.
Talking of cats on the pitch, Everton.
Yes.
Oh my goodness, the ultimate Premier League catfish. Losing to Wolves.
Pressure.
Bad times. They
pressure.
Are below par at this point, Everton, aren't they? They're below par.
They have been for a while.
Your catfish narrative is starting to eke into the wider world. I think we're 2 weeks away from it getting mentioned on Sunday Supplement.
Yeah, but if it does get mentioned, we disavow our knowledge of it.
Yeah,
it cannot be.
Neil Ashton is going to drop the back page of the Sun. Everton are a catfish.
Our hand cannot be seen in it. Michael, sorry,
we divorce ourselves from it.
I really interrupted you, Michael.
I think I was just going to go back to the Emery thing and the fact that it's a transitional season for sure, but. You know, it's not so long ago that Maurizio Sarri was being praised by us as well.
Yes, yeah, for sure.
For the job he has been doing at Chelsea. And, you know, I think there's perhaps some disparity there. I think Sarri did do a good job, but he's been hampered by not having some kind of plan B. Like we spoke about blueprints earlier. I think Pochettino provided the blueprint for beating Chelsea. He found a way of shutting down Jorginho, or he identified that was the key to making Chelsea tick. And then you saw Eddie Howe take it to a new level when they beat them 4-0. Like, they ruthlessly closed down Jorginho to the point that Chelsea just couldn't function. And I think Chelsea are perhaps a team that are struggling to make that adjustment more than Arsenal.
I think also with Sarri and Emery, though, if you look at the managers that are above them in the league, well, maybe apart from Emery because Man United are now above Arsenal, but it's Klopp, Guardiola and Pochettino.
I mean, yeah.
And they're guys who have all been there a few years now,
yeah,
and have all been through similar teething problems. And it's Emery and Sarri's first season in the league.
Mm.
You know, not the best environment to go into. Both teams struggled last season.
Yeah.
So I'm not giving them a bye, but I'm saying, you know, there was talk a few weeks ago of, for the first time I saw, of like Sarri out kind of thing. And I think that's just,
yeah,
it's just way, way too premature.
That's ridiculous. I think actually Chelsea created expectation because they were brilliant in those early stages at some points. And the way they dismantled Liverpool, for example, in the cup, it was only a cup game, but in the cup, in the Premier League, those back-to-back matches, they looked, I mean, like they could win the entire thing.
But you also saw that with Arsenal. And I think that's a bit of new manager bounce, you know, new players responding better to maybe
it's also
new
tactical
techniques.
People not working out what they're doing. You know, like Jorginho, for a long time, Pirlo played at the base of the Juventus midfield. And everyone used to say, well, press him out of sight, put a man on him. But it was easier said than done because you had those two blockers. You had Marquisio there. You had Vidal there. So maybe it's about Chelsea doing a bit more recruitment and protecting Jorginho. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having a plan B, yes, but they've got a plan B. They've got, you know, they've got Kovacic, they've got players that can come in and and rotate. So
well, that's it. And I think, you know, I think Sarri should have left Jorginho out for a couple of games and moved Kante to the anchor of midfield where he's, you know, been so successful in his career. And then bring Kovacic in, who has that game control.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe Barkley as well, but I think Kovacic is probably the better option there. And just kind of not get back to basics, but yeah, just establish that midfield dynamic again, which seemed to have been lost in recent weeks or since December, really. So yeah, I think there's an element of Chelsea just needing to remember what they're good at and putting, you know, square pegs in square holes.
That's right. Absolutely right.
Should we take a quick break and then some questions?
I think so.
Back from the break with some questions that you've been tweeting us at Rabonamag. First one from Mash St. Paddy.
Hey.
Our good friend.
The great man himself.
Is Emery cutting off his nose despite his face in the Ozil saga? No one wants to buy Ozil now at this moment. What is he achieving in leaving him out?
He's achieving nothing.
I feel like I've spoke about this with so many people in so many scenarios that I feel like...
It's a breakdown in communication and trust. It can't be. It's not about technique or about... It's got to be that.
Something's going on.
Yeah, it's personal. It has to be. And I'm not blaming Emery. I'm not blaming Ozil. I'm just saying... When a player, somebody of game-breaking technique and vision, is not starting or coming on regularly, then it's a person that is a breakdown in communication.
And we can only really comment on what we see once or twice a week on the field. I mean, there's a hell of a lot of stuff we don't see. Yeah. And there has to be some kind of personal issue
there.
It's
got to be something.
But then it's quite confusing because then Ozil will start against someone like Cardiff and be captain.
It's Cardiff.
Yeah, but be captain.
But Emery was saying
it's Cardiff.
That... He's the fourth.
Yeah, four or five captains.
Yeah, they have. Yeah. And if the three other ones aren't playing, he's automatically captain.
You're to mean it's.
Yeah, but
World Cup winning playmaker.
Worth noting that since we were last on air, Ozil turned down a loan move to PSG, which I find interesting. One of the few clubs who could afford him for a start. And secondly, I was kind of wondering actually whether that would be maybe a good move for him to go with someone like Thomas Tuchel. I don't know. He doesn't strike me as a Tuchel kind of player.
Well, the fact that Tuchel was interested in him says all.
Yeah.
And don't forget, he had Mkhitaryan and he basically, Tuchel loves cerebral number 10s, playmakers who can run the attack for him. Mm. And Ozil can run an attack like nobody else.
Yeah,
and
you can rely on him.
To bring him in to the PSG team where Neymar is out would knit together the PSG forward line in a way that, I mean, with that kind of speed ahead of him, the counterattacks he'd be launching would be terrifying.
And this is the thing that...
would be a really good move for him.
This is the thing that's quite weird about him not playing now. You know, he's got two very dynamic strikers there. Something's going on.
I don't think Emery... I would not criticise Emery there. I would say that's a workplace dispute, I think, and they resolve it however they do. Mm. But I wouldn't say that it was necessarily Emery's fault.
Yeah. Moving on to another midfielder. This one is from at Mr. Perspicacity.
Yes. Wow. Well,
first time.
If Pogba is a virus, how can we get Sanchez and Lukaku infected?
What a question.
Sharing toothbrushes.
Wow. Easier to infect Lukaku, unfortunately, than Sanchez, who I think has the Shevchenko problem. Which is he's played so much football at such high intensity from such an early age that his body is not capable of responding at the same degree of intensity throughout every match at the highest level anymore. I fear that.
How old is Sanchez?
30.
Is he 30?
But that's a hard running 30. That's a Wayne Rooney 30 or a Schweinsteiger 30, where you've basically been. And I'm not writing him off. I'm just saying that the level of intensity where you had a player who for 90 minutes would press the last man and do incredible amounts of defensive work.
And he had that four-year run where he didn't have a summer off either.
Right.
I do take that point to an extent, but the drop-off. I mean, he was only 18 months ago, he was running the show at Arsenal.
But they all have the drop-off. It's off a cliff. That's what gets them that's what's so shocking for them all. Happened to Torres, happened to Shevchenko, happened to Rooney. And it's like you're running through treacle.
I still think we can see the best of Sanchez at United. And I think, as we've seen with Rashford, I think Solskjaer is capable of extracting that. I don't think he's hit the wall yet. I just don't think so. I think he's a talented player. His head's not there.
It's not. I don't think it's talent. I think it's using him as particular bursts. I think if you use him for, you know, 60, 50, 70 minutes and rotate him, do you know what I mean? So he can give you that intensity. I just don't think he is, and I want to be clear with this, I don't think he is a week in, week out, 90-minute starter. I think he's somebody, I just think you need to rotate him. 70 minutes here, 70. Yeah, maybe 70. Does that make sense?
There may be a case for that, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I think the thing is, though, that just doesn't work for Sanchez. It's never worked for Sanchez in his career. I think that's one of the reasons that he was played so much, because he's always been very streaky. So he would have droughts, goal droughts, but once he would kind of get past that, he would just like light up for a streak.
Rooney was
and I think the thing is that he almost has to, he needs that relentless kind of playing time to keep a rhythm going.
Yeah.
And you saw it, there was a period where Arsene Wenger was taking him off a little bit more regularly and his form just really like stumbled.
Yeah.
It's easy to forget how kind of frustrating he can be as a player, though. You can forgive that, though, when he's scoring a load of goals. So I'm not entirely sure if it's going to work out for him at Man United anymore. It's not necessarily his fault. I just think to be honest, the signing at the time never felt good, a good fit. It really didn't feel like a good fit, and it still doesn't feel like
a good
fit.
We got because it was there. Before I forget, Lukaku, we just have to quickly say Lukaku, he can catch the virus because he and Pogba have a great understanding, actually.
Mm.
That can work. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's a great attacking option off the bench.
Yeah, I think there's less concerns or fewer concerns over Lukaku than Sanchez.
Final question from, I suppose, would you say, main photographer for Rabona?
The great man himself.
The great man himself. Ryu Fokel.
On Twitter at ToxSuede.
Yes. I have one, he says. I think he reads a question. Should we mix football and politics? Discuss.
They're inseparable.
I agree.
They're inseparable.
Yeah.
I mean, football's like one of the greatest examples of soft power anywhere in the world. It's inherently political, isn't
Sports
it?
Sports are always politicized and used for political reasons, so.
I think it's almost inherently political at professional level.
Mm. Yeah.
Look at nationalism. I mean, it's just basically right there, right?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of do think that football has some, I think footballers could do more in terms of really being spokesmen or spokeswomen. I mean, to be fair though, I think the women's game is a lot further ahead on that count.
Yeah.
But I think that in the men's game, it would be good to see more people talking about.
I almost wonder because women's football has had to carve itself out. It's had to carve itself back out of obscurity, you know, because 1924, we talk about this, women's football was so popular. And then the Football League in the UK just shut off women's grounds for 50 years.
Well, yeah, I mean, they've had a hell of a lot more to deal
with.
Right,
because they've had to carve their way back into the public consciousness from that place, I think it has created an inherently more political outlook, maybe.
Mm.
Whereas men's football has kind of carried on largely unimpeded by these structures.
Yeah.
And you have to say, for all of its faults, FIFA has actually been one of the... has recognised regions of the world before the world has, if that makes sense, recognize them as football nations. They have actually been ahead of the game sometimes.
This is really interesting with FIFA, because I was talking to Philippe Leclerc about this, and he said when Sepp Blatter left FIFA, we would see that he'd been a moderating force.
Yeah.
As bad as Blatter may have been in terms of personal you know, level of like, you know, enrichment, self-enrichment, Blatter was someone that liked football and didn't want the World Cup going in the direction it's going into. And he said Infantino will be a different character altogether. And we've seen that.
Yeah.
We've seen, because, you know, Blatter, for all his faults, was somebody that did have this sort of slightly evangelical approach to football and its power and its ability to bring people into the international community. So I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
And I just hope that we have more voices within FIFA who are allowed to moderate or use that. Yeah,
because I'm thinking Palestine, I think, was recognised by FIFA long before.
That's really interesting. Look into that.
North Macedonia, more recently.
That is really interesting, actually.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because FIFA, where they choose to play tournaments and where they choose not to, are really interesting. I think that now the political climate we're in, and this is maybe a conversation for another podcast, because there's so much to say about football and politics, and there will be so much more with the World Cup coming up. Footballers maybe have a bigger role than they might admit to at the moment, which is why I was so glad to see Sterling speaking out about race.
Yeah.
And I'm so encouraged to see people speaking out about the case of the Bahraini footballer
Hakim El Harabi.
Yeah, who's currently in a world of torment in Thailand.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to do something on that on another podcast, but with someone who's been very, like, really, really following the situation. I think the reason we haven't gone into that is because none of us are as clued up about it.
There's a great guy to look at, I think, on Twitter, Francis Awaritefe, I think is his Twitter handle, based over in Sydney. Shout out to Francis, lovely man, a law graduate and a scholar and a gentleman. So check out his work. But yeah, let's return to that theme at some point because I think it's important.
Mm. Should take another quick break.
Absolutely. Back from the break, and this segment was inspired by the visit that Ryan and I paid to Carrington Training Ground, Manchester United, to interview Ander Herrera. And in the course of the conversation with Herrera, it became clear to me that Herrera is someone who is not on the face of it, you know, sort of the roughest player. He's a very creative player, but he has a tough streak, a deceptively tough streak.
Real intensity.
Yeah, real intensity, a real focus. So we thought, why don't we put together a kind of a selection of, I suppose, unexpectedly tough guys, underrated tough guys.
Yeah, it just made us think, didn't it, about like, who's actually
low-key nails.
Absolutely, low-key nails, fantastic. So Michael, low-key nails, who are the underrated
Speaking
tough guys?
Speaking of low-key nails, Michael.
Well, the whole of the Uruguay team are a given.
But you can see them coming, that's the thing. So they're almost, they're tough guys for sure, but you can see them coming. Does that make sense? I mean, you saw Diego Godin in a bar. You would kind of steer slightly to the left or the right.
I think that's a safe assumption.
This is a little bit of an aside, but there was once I was waiting to get a train up to Manchester and the Crystal Palace squad were in Cafe Nero outside Euston Station. And all of them were absolutely hench.
Yeah, there's a few nails in that team.
Like, hench. This was maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, so pre-Jeffrey Schlupp.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't get on the wrong side of him.
I forgot, the names escaped me, but the Australian ex-captain.
Jedinak.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness. That guy.
Vesuvius. He's got guns.
He's a big dude. That's the thing, though. Again, not underrated because you see that coming.
Exactly.
You see that and it's visible. That guy is like almost has a GPS on him. You can see him from a distance. I'm interested in the ones who...
You don't suspect.
The sly ones, because they're the ones that fascinate me. They're intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of talking about this before we came on, which is why we decided to do it properly, I suppose.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Because it spurned a debate.
Because you mentioned Eric Bailly,
yeah,
which I think is intriguing.
Yeah, but I think Eric Bailly is... I think there's different levels of nails. I think like there's obviously the ones who are just going to brawl, and Bailly strikes me as the kind of guy who you won't hear him coming. You won't know he's got you, and he's already gone before anyone's noticed that anything's happened.
Yeah, those ones. Like John Wick.
Slick operator.
Just the next level intelligent ninja assassin kind of guy.
I think it's the clean shaven thing, isn't it? It's all a bit clean. Like, he wouldn't get his cuffs dirty.
Yeah, very neat living quarters.
But brutal, yeah, exactly. It's funny, actually, you should mention Bailly, because I was talking to someone, a friend of mine, who did a lot of work with different MCs, who's collaborated with different artists. And we're going, oh yeah, that guy's like a tough guy, that guy. And we were mentioning different MCs who are tough. And there was this one guy he'd worked with who were like, he was like, no, that's the one. I'm like, no. And he's like, no, this, I won't name him, that guy is a dangerous dude. He was like, no, but he doesn't talk about any of that stuff in his lyrics. None of it. He's never in trouble with anything. But that guy, he said, like, from people that know him, like, he would never say it on record, whatever, but that's the dude. Mm. And I was fascinated by that. There were levels to that. There's levels to that. I love this conversation. It feels a bit freeform. We're still in the EU for the next few weeks, so at least let's have some directives, right? I think there need to be criteria.
Yeah, let's not go crashing out of the podcast market. Yeah,
it's not a no-deal podcast. Yeah, right. Listen, I think if you're going to be nails, there needs to be an element. If you're going to be underrated and tough, there needs to be an element of a chip on the shoulder. There needs to be some form of grudge, right? Because big guys, big tough guys, conventional big tough guys, they're kind of alphas. They don't really have that chip on the shoulder, and you need that. And I think everyone needs a chip.
That's why Fernandinho strikes me as a real tough guy. I wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of
because
him.
Because he never really fronts. He never starts anything.
Yeah.
But I bet he ends.
Do you know how you know he's an underrated tough guy? Because Guardiola went nuts when they said that he did all those tactical fouls. Do you remember someone said, Fernandinho does so many fouls and smiles and runs off?
Yeah.
And Guardiola went nuts because he was like, oh my goodness, you've outed him. Yeah. That's why he was angry.
Yeah, he takes pleasure in it.
Yeah. Guardiola wasn't angry that it was true. He was angry that it was true.
Mm.
And so that's why I think Fernandinho is a really strong contender.
Okay, so I've got a question. So Sergio Ramos gets a lot of hype for being a hard man.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's the hardest Real Madrid defender.
He's got the best marketing, for sure.
I think he's just a and there's a difference.
Am I going to have to bleep that?
There's a big difference, though. You know, like Fernandinho, you really, really don't want to cross him. Sergio Ramos, I think you can handle
it. I would say this. I mean, Ramos is a pantomime villain. Pepe was a pantomime villain and was also genuinely unsettling.
Whenever I think of Pepe, I think of him stepping on Messi's hand.
Yeah, that was nice.
I mean, you have basically Vinny Jones with incredible technique, and that's Pepe. That's frightening.
Do you know, I can't remember who it was, but I saw something amazing about Pepe where basically he's got long curly hair now, or longer curly hair, and it was like anyone who is that bald by choice
That is an extremely strong shout.
Is not to be messed with.
Yeah.
Do you know, that's actually a very,
for that
very
long as well.
That's what me, you know, Musa and I are not genuine.
Because
tough
when
guys.
You want the wind close to your skull, when you choose to have the cold wind close to your skull, that is, that's extraordinary.
Yeah. So anyway, I think that, so let's go through him. So I don't think it's Ramos.
No.
I think Varane, when it's all kicking off, Varane's stood at the back, leaning against the wall, smoking a cigarette, being
talking
like,
to the opposition, going,
just, this is beneath me. I don't need this.
But I think he's capable if he needs.
Yeah, but he's too.
He's more like questioning the mortality of man and the futility of the sporting enterprise and making grand gestures and going, what is this? You know, what time? We're the last days of Rome. You can imagine pontificating. Are we but the mob? Are we but the mob? You know, sort of quoting Aristotle. You can imagine that, can't you? Yeah.
I think it's Marcelo.
Yeah, that's a strong shout. I mean, Marcelo would want it for sure. I think he'd be relentless. And actually, I have to say this. The thing about Marcelo that makes him tough, low-key tough, is the fact that in that Champions League final, I think I mentioned this before, every outlet pass in the first 15 minutes when Liverpool's press was terrifying went to Marcelo. Every floated pass. Cruz was not getting the ball. Modric wasn't getting much of it. It was bypassing him. Carvajal wasn't getting it. Every floated pass came to Marcelo on the left wing because everybody knew he could handle the press. And to me, that's a certain type of guts to know that you're going to be crashed upon by three of the most brutal attacking midfielders in the world and still come out with it. So there's a kind of toughness there. Like he is a guy that will get you out of a scrape for sure. That's good. That's Loki. So we've got Fernandinho, we've got Marcelo.
I
think we need an 11.
I think it's happening. I think it's happening.
Who's our keeper?
But there's got to be a keeper that comes out through traffic and is fearless.
I actually reckon Donnarumma's handy.
Maybe.
Oh, that is actually quite a good
shout. Back in the day, Jens Lehmann though. Come on.
Yeah.
They've had no shortage of hard men in goal. We're doing modern day though, aren't we? Modern day.
Yeah, modern day.
Goalkeepers. We'll come back to goalkeepers.
All right.
Don't worry.
Striker. I'm just going to throw this in there. Mitrovic.
Oh my God. Nobody wants any part of that.
Mm-mm.
No one wants any of that.
Still active players.
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, yeah, because otherwise we could go.
We're playing 4-3-3.
Mitrovic.
What's the hardest formation?
No, because it can't. It's got to be a formation that's actually quite delicate. It can't be a 4-4-2.
1-1-8.
4-3-3.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Okay. Mitrovic up
all top. Out attack.
Yeah, left side forward. Left side forward. Not Mbappe, because Mbappe, I think he starts fights and runs away. We saw him do that France Uruguay, didn't we?
When it kicked off between Lingard and Kolasinac in the Arsenal Man United game. In the cup a couple of weeks ago, we were watching it together and we were trying to stop Lingard from going after Kolasinac because I don't think that's wise. And actually, he was kind of going after him to defend Marcus Rashford. And we were saying that Lingard is the one who is most aggy in that situation.
Yeah.
But I actually think out of the two of them,
Rashford is like one of these people who I think he's interesting because he's already physically incredibly robust. And I was looking at his goal scoring, and he scored more goals at the age of 21 than anyone, including Salah, Kane, Cristiano Ronaldo. And he's been doing it, playing really out of position. Like most of those players were playing in their natural, in their favourite position from the start of their careers, apart from Ronaldo, who's playing wide than came inside. But Rashford basically has been playing all over the place, like much more than anybody else, and has scored way more goals. So it's crazy. And part of that is because he's physically so imposing. So actually, I think it's weird, like Rashford's goal output shows that he's, I think, low-key quite tough. We could put Rashford in there.
Ooh, you know, I'd put Rashford in there.
Rashford. How about this? Rashford, Mitrovic, and then other wide forward, Shaqiri.
Low centre of gravity.
And tough. And yeah, I think Shaqiri.
Hard to get down.
Shaqiri. Let's see, who we got at right back?
Well, let's go centre back. I'm thinking Lovren.
Ooh.
Yeah, I like that. A chip on the shoulder.
Good technique. there has to be some kind of motivation for
there's got to be a form of grievance a sense of being underrated. I mean, because see, Van Dijk's the obvious, but he's rated.
Yeah.
He's highly rated.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Marcelo Lovren, I like that. Midfield, I mean, we've already got a City player, so I won't put him in, but I think Bernardo Silva's really tough. I think he's really tough. I actually just like him because he's a kind of, he could play any one of like six positions. And for me, that's what the key to being an underrated hard man is. You can kind of drop him in anywhere.
Mm.
Like someone like Matuidi, actually.
I reckon Matuidi is a very good shout.
Matuidi, yep. Put Blaise Matuidi in there just because he handled his business in the World Cup.
Mm. Well, actually, shouldn't we have Herrera in there considering he kickstarted the conversation?
Yeah,
I think we should. Yeah, I think Herrera.
Absolutely.
And the thing about Herrera, which is amazing, is that one thing he said about if I'm in the game for 30 seconds, it's 100%. Yeah. If I'm there for the whole game, it's 100%.
He mentioned it twice. He came on against QPR.
Yeah.
I was like, I played 2 minutes against QPR, came in and went in. Yeah. I'm like, he's not a big guy, but his presence. He sort of sat there in that chair when I was talking to him, so slightly leaning forward. You're off to the side. You were to his right, and I was.
Yeah.
And he sort of leans forward, and it's like sort of, it was like watching a tennis player awaiting a second serve. Mm. Like the first serve's gone into the net, and he's like, okay.
He steps in.
This is the second.
Four match point.
Yeah, right, that was it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It, somehow, even though he was seated, he seemed to step into every question.
Mm.
In a way that was really forensic and impressive. It was almost like talking to somebody who, you know, when you hear these senior economists who know that their pronouncements will affect the direction of the stock market. So they're so measured.
Yeah.
It was like that. And to me, that was the toughness. It was like the measured nature of it. You know, it was really, really intriguing. Okay, great. Midfield of Matuidi, Fernandinho, Herrera. Nobody wants it with that. That's tough.
I mean, I'm obviously not Premier League level, but I'm a centre midfielder and I would not fancy that.
No, I wouldn't fancy it either. I want no part of that. Piszczek at Dortmund.
Piszczek is tough.
Piszczek is terrifying.
But I got to say, we can't have an 11 without Kolasinac.
Are you going to put him in there?
He has to be.
Well, just chuck him in.
Marcelo.
You could put him in at centre-back.
No, I think I'd take Kolasinac over Marcelo.
Yeah, I would actually.
Me too.
Sorry, Marcelo.
You can go on the bench. Yeah.
Stick Marcelo in goal.
To be honest, no one's going to get past that line that you have a rush goalie.
No one's going to get out of their own half.
I'll put myself in goal.
But if you have a hard as nails goalkeeper that you can recommend us, listeners, then tweet us.
Lopez is a shout, actually. He's also a little bit wild.
He's a bit too much of a talker.
I think, that goes against my rule.
He's a bit too much of a talker. Mm. You know, he ruined his aura that time that Messi was trolling him to high hell.
Muslera.
Ooh.
I like that a lot.
Muslera.
That's block capitals. Muslera. I love that. I love that for so many reasons.
I mean, if he was playing regularly, I would have given Willy Caballero a shout because I think he's pretty,
he'd bring the pain, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
He'd bring the pain for sure.
I think he's the, I'm sure I've seen him on the door at some clubs. Caballero.
Yeah. All right, so we just need a centre back.
Ooh, and it's not going to Ramos.
The funny thing is the centre backs are more obvious, Hardman. That's the challenge with them.
Who's the massive guy who plays for Saints? Southampton.
Oh,
they've got a new one.
Yannick Vestergaard.
Yeah. He's
I'm thinking.
Colossal.
I'm thinking Umtiti as well. He's a guy that wouldn't start but end. He's a silent.
And also the thing I love about Umtiti is that he's so confident at how nails he is. He's just super funny. Yeah. Really, you know.
It's got to be Umtiti. Do you know what? There's a few listeners this podcast are going to absolutely love that inclusion. There are certain Umtiti enthusiasts on Twitter who, whenever Umtiti content is shared, respond very approvingly.
Are we going to get a load of responses with his celebration gif?
I'll just tag them. I'll send them the DM and say, listen, here's the podcast.
Right, so we're going to go for the final 11.
Yeah, so our 11, Muslera in goal, right back of Piszczek.
Yeah.
Centre-backs Umtiti and Lovren. Left-back Kolasinac.
Brutal.
Tough already.
Oh, goodness.
So we got a three-man midfield of Matuidi, Fernandinho, and our man Herrera.
Mm-hmm.
My lord.
And up front, we've gone for Rashford, which I think is the joker in the pack.
I think he's the secret weapon, though.
I think so.
Shaqiri, and then...
Mitrovic.
And also, I think Rashford is the one that everyone will pick on first. And when they've realised that he's actually not the one to pick on, then I think that's going to...
Well, I don't think anyone in their right mind would pick on any player in this 11.
Yeah, and they're going to play in a home strip of... torn off sleeves.
Oh my goodness. This is actually a good trailer for a piece I wrote for Abonner, which is called The Sunday League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which is about hard men.
Coming soon.
Yes, coming soon. It's basically about those players who you could easily imagine playing Sunday League football as well as professional football.
Mm.
And it was inspired by Atleti Juventus Champions League tie the upcoming tie, which will feature some of the toughest men on God's earth.
I can't wait for that game or that tie. It's going to be...
I can't wait for the Champions League, to
be honest. It's going to be 180 minutes of prime, solid gold shithousery. I can't wait.
Can I just say, you are the sweariest member of this podcast.
I would say so.
I'm like the Methodist. I'm the Methodist Christian, this podcast.
I think I've sworn once and it was about 15 minutes ago.
With me, it's just such premium content.
It's all about picking your swear words so you don't have to...
And that is actually a great word.
Is that a swear word?
Kind of.
You said it twice now.
The one thing I will say about that word... S House, because I'm just, you know, for the, it's a family show.
That just makes me think of Cameo.
But there's no other word for it, is there? There's no other word for that type of behaviour in football.
Yeah, and also, come on, we're all adults.
We are adults. We are absolutely adults. On which note, as a great institution once said, that's all, folks, for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Yeah, I know. Listen, let's go in. Listen, you can't beat the classic.
If you listen on iTunes, give us a rate and a review, preferably 5 stars. Mm-hmm. That would be very handy indeed.
You can find us on all social media channels, same handle, @RabonaMag. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Michael. Take care and see you next week.